This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and we're going to talk about work stress and burnout today. With us is Shyla Merghain. She is a distinguished psychologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. She specializes in adjustment issues and mood and anxiety disorders. And we'd like you to be part of our conversation. What would you like to know about dealing with stress from work? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Shyla, it's so good to hear from you again.
Thanks for having me, Jill.
You bet. So are we just more stressed from our jobs than we used to be?
Yes, I think when we look at the pandemic and some of the mental health challenges that have occurred, we find that almost half of people reporting high levels of daily stress. And when we think about how our jobs have been impacted by the pandemic, it's no surprise to see that some reports are saying that upwards of 61% of U.S. professionals feel like they're burning out and having that type of stress that feels unmanageable. And that's really concerning because when people are burning out, they have difficulty really engaging at work. They're less productive. They have trouble focusing or concentrating, and also upwards of three times more likely to seek employment elsewhere. And really, this takes a toll on the employee, but also on the workplace.
So is there an actual clinical definition of burnout?
Burnout is a term that is different than stress. So I think it's really important to differentiate between the two. Stress happens when we have a task or too many tasks we're doing, but we don't feel like we have enough inner resources available to tackle them, like we don't have enough time or we don't have the knowledge or we don't have the support. And what happens is that if that task is reduced or taken away, that can help relieve the feelings of stress. So stress tends to peak and then dissipate. Burnout, on the other hand, develops when there is this accumulation of stress. There's no relief from it. There's this constant build, or it's churning in the background. And as a result, there can be emotional, physical, and mental exhaustion when we are experiencing a lot of stress over a long period of time. So burnout is more gradual, and we might not even realize it's happening. When we think about in the workplace, we might start to detach. We can lose motivation. We can become cynical and feel like we have nothing left to give. And because it's gradual, this sense, it's kind of like this new normal, it can be difficult to realize that a change is needed. And I think a really important point is when we're in that state of burnout, we lack some of those inner resources to make the change. And so that's why I'm really excited to talk about how can we really safeguard our mental health and protect ourselves against burnout and deal more effectively with the stress that is occurring, I think, in most jobs right now.
And you had mentioned earlier that stress and burnout are reasons why many people are changing jobs. And if they don't know how to deal with stress at the new job, is that just going to happen all over again?
You know, oftentimes it is, I always say, you take yourself where you go. So if you find yourself, you know, unhappy and not able to deal with stress in one job, it can really follow you into the next workplace. You know, not always, but again, I really want to think about stress resilience as a skill that even if we do go to a better job, that, you know, no job's perfect. There are always stressors everywhere. There's
sure.
Stress in being human on the planet. So regardless of where you're at, I really want to empower people to work on some of these stress recovery skills we're going to be talking about this morning. And I'm sure our listeners will have great ideas as well. We always love hearing from them.
Oh, we do. We do. And if you want to call in, 800-642-1234. And you can always email, and our email is ideas@wpr.org. So let's talk about ways to deal with stress in the job that we have now.
Great. So first I want to go and talk about our physiology because it's really important to understand stress and recovery. The analogy I like to use is a teeter-totter. When the teeter-totter is straight, it's kind of represents our system in balance. Now, stress happens. We're designed to deal with stress. We've had stress since our ancestors on the tundra as cavemen and cavewomen. So stress isn't a problem, but what can happen is that we get stuck in stress, kind of like that teeter-totter of stresses in one side, we get stuck with that side getting activated. And what we often aren't good at and what we need to work on is, as a skill, is the other side of the teeter-totter, which is recovery from stress. So again, let's think about it physiologically. When we're stressed, we have a burst in cortisol in our system. We might have anxiety or elevated energy output. And if we get stuck there, again, our system can have too much of that stress response, that sympathetic nervous system, that cortisol. So we want to engage that other side, again, that teeter-totter, that other side, that recovery through various practices that we can talk about so we can keep our system in balance. And, you know, in part of my job, I do sports psychology, and what we find is that athletes train in recovery. What really differentiates between an athlete that can win an event and those that can't, they're actively working on that recovery. We also see other professions like pilots really need to work on recovery so that they can perform well in the moment. And so we can talk about what recovery looks like. It's going to look a little different for different people. But again, when we notice, if we can identify, gosh, I've gotten stressed, you know, my heart rate's elevating, I'm tense, my mind might be racing, maybe I'm feeling anxiety, or I'm complaining a lot, or I'm not sleeping well. Instead of that, again, becoming your new normal, which makes you very vulnerable to burnout, that is the time to work on that recovery skill and really prioritize that. So again, you're really safeguarding your well-being to get that system back in that homeostasis or equilibrium where we do our best work in life, but also really enjoy our day-to-day moments that are occurring around us and really present for our personal lives and family as well and friends.
So this is something that you call like a recovery cycle, right? We stress and then we recover and can repeat. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because stress in and of itself isn't problematic. It's the fact that people often aren't actively engaging the skill of recovery. And so I'd like to talk about how can we develop a recovery plan to have these recovery skills that can help us physically, mentally, and emotionally recover. So again, we can, like that teeter-totter, we're in that balance and not just stuck in that stress response. And many people, unfortunately, have kind of during the pandemic kind of gotten stuck in that stress response. There's so much overwhelm. There's so many changes. There's so much we're dealing with. This is on the planet that we've kind of inadvertently gotten stuck in that. And again, we, you know, there are health implications, mental health implications, and just well-being implications when we're in that place. And we don't have to be. That's where the empowerment a little bit goes a long way. Identifying them in that stress cycle, how do I get my recovery plan to get that recovery cycle to keep that balance?
Okay, so what are some of the things that we can do to help ourselves recover?
Yeah. So again, when we think about recovery, we're thinking about it in a couple different ways. I think there is a kind of a recovery at work we can do and then a recovery after work. So there are a couple of things I want to point out. The first is one of the things I've observed during the pandemic when many people were working from home was that there was too much of a blend with work and life. You know, we set up ways of working from home, whether it's virtual or checking email from home, and many people aren't having the hard stop at the end of the workday that they did pre-pandemic. And this can leave us thinking about work in the evening. There was some research that showed just the mere presence of a smartphone makes you feel like you can't detach from the office and starts to distract you from the present moment. So the first thing is thinking about having a better boundary of when you leave work. So you might think about not checking email or turning off your phone or turning off the notifications. Also training your mind that in the evening hours or weekends, if you're working a 9-to-5 shift or it just could be when you're not at work, mentally picturing a stop sign of not having your mind go to ruminating about work, dwelling on work, talking about work, you know, talking about anything
yes.
else other than work.
Very guilty.
Mindfulness can be helpful. You know, mindfulness, you know, I've talked a lot with you, Jill and Larry, about mindfulness practices, something as simple as a 5 senses practice where you just notice 5 things in your environment you see, 4 things you hear, 3 things you touch, 2 things you smell, 1 thing you taste. can ground you in the here and now and realize I'm not at work. There's no benefit to thinking about work if I'm not on an urgent deadline. Or even just something as simple as 3 mindful breaths, feeling your feet in the chair, feet on the ground, can just ground you in the moment. And then spaciousness opens up and there's so many other things to be thinking about. So I think that's kind of the first thing in a recovery plan is to really detach from work and give yourself that break. And I think that also can go to kids going to school too. You know, I know your next guest is talking about the transition to the school day. Kids need a little bit of a break from school, which is work. And so encouraging kids also, they, you know, might just be on the weekends if they're older children and having homework too. So if you can model that for them, giving them permission too to take a break as well.
Yeah, that makes total sense because I know our kids tend to be so overwhelmed these days, as we all are, but it's especially difficult for the young mind, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, very much so. And again, we can really empower them by doing the skill development ourselves and then teaching them.
Okay. Well, we're talking about work stress with Shyla Merguin. She is a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. What questions do you have about relieving your stress from work? We're here to help. Well, actually, Shyla's here to help, and I'm here to facilitate. Join in by calling 800-642-1234. Our on-air producer today is Clara Neipert, and Trina LaSousa is our technical director. This is the Larry Mueller Show, and I'm Jill Nadeau. After 11:45, we'll talk about how to help kids transition to a school sleep schedule. That's next on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking about dealing with stress from work. And we just talked a little bit about what you can do after you get home from work, but what about during the work day itself?
Yeah, Jill, that is a great question. And again, if we use an athlete's example, work days can be like an ultra distance race or a long marathon that we're getting through. And again, if you look at athletes that are runners, they need pit stops along the way. They need to hydrate. They need to fuel. Maybe they need to walk a little bit to conserve their energy. And sometimes we can be in work cultures where they expect us to just, you know, do so many tasks in an hour or get everything done. And that can lead to physical exhaustion. So instead, I want us to think about how can we build in little micro breaks during the day. So again, when we look at the research, there's really solid research that says in an 8-hour workday or for however many hours you're working, some people may be part-time, some may have longer shifts, to really take that time to step away for a short period of time. You know, if you can get 10 minutes, great. If even shorter can be good. And then do something to really build your energy. For example, maybe you eat something or hydrate. Maybe you do some meditation. Maybe you have a little social interaction with a coworker, or maybe you shift focus by reading something that isn't going to be so stressful. So thinking about taking those shorter breaks, and then if you can, think about how you want to use that lunch hour, that longer break. For some people, maybe it's really energizing to sit down with coworkers and have that lunch. For others, maybe it's just being on your own and really reading something. Now, sometimes there's times to work through the lunch hour. And again, just thinking about, is that going to allow me to feel better at the end of the day? That's okay, too. We probably don't want to always do that. But if you are doing that, again, it's really important to build in those little breaks. And sometimes people have this mindset, hey, I'll take my rest. I'll recover on the weekend. Kind of like a weekend warrior, you know, I'm going to put it all in on the weekend. And what we find is that is so much less effective than really giving yourself a little bit of that recovery during the workday. So again, think about stress recovery, stress recovery, stress recovery, not just stress to the point of collapse and then trying to rectify that with a long recovery in the evening or the weekend. That's much less effective. And again, when we're doing those little small breaks during the day, really be present with them, really enjoy it. That's not the time to be on your smartphone checking email. You know, that's the time to really fully immerse yourself in that. And what we find from an athletic and a peak performance community, that doing that just really refuels you a little bit, can go a long way. So you can then come back to the work task more motivated, more focused, more energized, and more enthusiastic.
Yeah, I found that work myself when I'm stuck with a word that I just can't get that paragraph out or something. I'll just get up, walk around, do something else, come back, and all of a sudden, hey, it works, you know? So, yeah.
So true, Jill.
Yeah. Now, how do people find an activity that actually works for them? Is it just experimentation?
Absolutely. And as I said earlier, people, it's going to look different for one person versus another. Sometimes we have a lot of shoulds, like I should do a yoga practice, or I should go to an exercise class, or I should meditate. And for some people, that's going to really re-energize them. For others, it actually can be draining. I was, some people prefer more solo activities. Some really feel energized by community activities. So really experimenting, and in particular, paying attention to what is my energy like afterwards? What is my mood like afterwards? If it's really depleting and draining, like going to a group exercise class, you know, that might feel really draining. Versus if I take a solo walk by myself, that that might be more energizing. So again, looking at your energy level after the task. And sometimes you have to negotiate it a little bit with loved ones. Like, let's say your partner really enjoys going to, I don't know, sci-fi movies, theater, and you just hate them. Maybe your partner goes to see the movie while you work on a sewing project. So sometimes it requires a little bit of assertiveness and speaking up.
Mm-hmm. We've got a call from Lee in Minocqua. Hi, Lee. Lee, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. What did you want to tell us about?
I wanted to thank you for covering the topic today. Work is very stressful at times. I also wanted to add, I think it's important to talk about the difference between positive and negative stress, eustress stress and distress, and how you can help your body by regularly exercising and doing that things in preparation for the negative types of stress.
Okay, thanks, Lee. Shyla?
Oh, Lee, thank you. You're actually reading my mind, and I'm so glad you provided us, because it's really a segue into this kind of next point. And yeah, there are different types of stress, right? Positive stress, although it might be physically demanding and taxing, can feel kind of enlivening. And, we want to keep that, like maybe a performance that you're doing in front of other people, or maybe working on a project and it's a lot of energy, but then you finish it and you feel exhilarated. So not all stress is negative. And thank you for highlighting that. And then you brought up such a great point around using exercise as recovery. And again, when we look at research, there is research that indicates that recovery, doing something active, something physical, like maybe you're going for a bike ride out in the summer sun, or going to a local pool and going for a swim, or maybe you're somebody who enjoys some of those team sports like basketball or soccer and join a league. Seems like that kind of active exercise can really be helpful and very effective for recovery. There are things like, you know, relaxing activities like meditation or yoga or zoning out to a Netflix series or reading a good book. Those are helpful too, but it seems like that combination, and not just thinking of, I just have to chill out to recover, that actually taking that walk, getting that physical exercise is really, really important. And equally so, when we think about high stress, we also find that another really interesting way of recovery is building mastery in something outside of work. Like maybe you're learning a new language, or you're taking up a skill, or you're taking a class to learn a new kind of activity. And we find that when we are engaged in those hobbies or tasks or activities that are building mastery, really involves a different part of our brain and can be often the most pleasurable times in our week. So looking at, is there something maybe I want to learn or a skill I want to grow as that way of building some of that recovery from work? And again, when we're doing those things, where there can be some of those peak moments, and it just helps us differentiate between thinking about work and then thinking about something else. So oftentimes when we're engaged in those activities, it's a great distraction from work.
And I know many times people like to socialize with the people that they work with. Can that become a problem in that you never have that separation?
Absolutely. In that oftentimes when we're getting together with coworkers, what do we talk about? It's work.
Right.
So I think it's really important that if you are socializing with your coworkers on the weekend or the evening, maybe you talk about work for a few minutes, but then setting that boundary again, separating psychologically from work. So setting that boundary, hey, let's talk about other aspects of our lives and each other, and let's leave work to talk about that Monday morning when we're back in the office.
Okay, and if you want to join in conversation, we have open lines, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email, and that's ideas@wpr.org. What are some of the ways that you help yourself deal with stress from work? We'd like to hear your ideas, too, so join in. So, Shyla, are businesses aware of what is going on with the stress levels of their workers?
Absolutely. And I really see businesses starting to prioritize employees' mental health with building up EAP programs or providing free webinars or seminars to employees around mental health, or just really destigmatizing mental health challenges. So making it a safer culture to talk about where you're struggling. And I know workplaces have also experimented with different forms of work, like a hybrid model or more flexible hours, or also redesigning workspaces. Like maybe you have a sitting, standing desk, or you have a different kind of work setup. And, you know, another really interesting aspect that I've seen much more research being done and workplaces noticing is having contact with nature. So if you look at new buildings being designed for workplaces, they're often prioritizing the outdoor space as much as the indoor space. So there's such really interesting research showing that just going outside for 10 minutes and taking a walk in a urban park or looking at trees or watching flowers or tromping through the snow in a natural space. Doing that for 10 minutes, as little as 10 minutes, can really help with that recovery from work stress, that you return more energized, more focused, better mood, better motivation, even improved sleep has been linked to that. And sometimes I know for myself, I worked in an indoor office for 10 years at UW Health till an employee left, and I grabbed that office with a window.
Yes.
So, you know, it's great if we have a window, but not all of us do, and I can really appreciate how that can be challenging. So what is interesting, there's some solid research that shows even looking at pictures of nature can provide some of the same benefits if you find yourself in an indoor space. So it could be looking at pictures on your phone, having that as a screensaver on your computer, or even bringing in an image or two of nature, a picture that you can look at. So there is something really healing and beneficial from being connected to nature that I think gives us something above and beyond what even human interaction can.
Would it make sense if you're allowed to bring in plants and, you know, maybe some shells from a trip or other pieces of nature that could maybe transport you to a different spot?
I love that idea, Jill. Absolutely. Bringing in a plant, or maybe you've gone on vacation and you collected some rocks, or you have some favorite shells that you mentioned, and bringing those in, because I think what it'll also do is anchor that memory of that time kind of a peak moment that you were on the beach or hiking through the woods, and you can kind of access that memory that transports you back to that experience. And when we're doing those things, again, there's a physiological shift that instead of that cortisol, that stress churning through our system, we can have some of those other beneficial changes in our physiology linked to that rest part of our central nervous system to get us back into balance.
So what suggestions do you have for someone who, you know, needs to tell their place of employment, hey, I'm struggling, but they're you know, a little hesitant just because they don't know how it's going to be received?
That's a great question. You know, first, to know that you're not alone. I think almost everyone has struggled at some point with mental health during the pandemic. So to destigmatize the need for help. And then think about who is the best person to contact. Is it somebody in HR? Is it your boss? Is it a coworker? And thinking about what resources do you need? I always encourage people, if you find you're struggling and it's impacting your own personal well-being in terms of maybe you are, friends and family are noticing you're not yourself, or you're not sleeping or eating or drinking too much, or you're struggling with tasks at work, that's the time to seek professional help. So there are EAP programs, behavioral health specialists. Some workplaces even have in-house clinicians you can talk to. So think about that. And then second, just think about, are there any small shifts or even large shifts in the workplace that would be helpful to you? Like maybe you need more of a hybrid model where you can work from home, or maybe you need to delegate some tasks, or maybe you need to set harder boundaries around when you're done with work, or maybe you just need to take those small breaks. I had a lot of people who are working with mindfulness who really negotiate that with their employer, saying, hey, I'm going to take a 10-minute mindfulness break. I'm not napping, if you see my eyes closed, but I'm going to put a sign on the door, do not disturb. And is that okay? And the employer usually, you know, for the most part, is fine with it. And then letting the coworkers know, when you see that sign, that's my mindfulness break, and I'll reemerge when I'm done with that practice. Or, you know, not everyone has offices that they can close the door. So getting creative about, can I go to a conference room, or maybe I can go sit in my car for 10 minutes and get that break. So sometimes there's a bit of a negotiation there. But I do find, again, that employers are quite receptive because, you know, they recognize the value of retention and productivity and satisfaction in work as really being an important part of the company's mission, our workplace mission.
So it's really important to talk to people before you go on your walkabout or actually do some of this stuff. What about people that aren't necessarily in an office building, that they're in manufacturing or they're in some kind of service industry? What suggestions do you have for them?
I'm so glad you brought that up, right? Because there are so many different forms of work and different work cultures and different work tasks. And sometimes some of those jobs can have pretty demanding metrics, like I have to do so many filling inventory in this amount of time. Or I'm thinking of like grocery store workers. I have to check out these many customers in this amount of time. And I think then also just looking at good ergonomics, like do you have the right kind of shoes if you're standing, or can there be, you know, a certain surface that you're sitting on or standing on that could be more comfortable that you could bring something in or negotiate? And then really, again, thinking about when I do have those breaks, how am I using them? And I think one of the things that we've kind of tended towards is just scrolling on our phone, right? We have a 10-minute break, we go, we look at social media, but that rarely is re-energizing, and in fact can be even a little more stressful. And again, we were talking about children, that's often we think about really teaching children how to build in those recovery breaks. Kids can automatically go to their phone and behind the screen. And so maybe saying, hey, I'm going to check social media from this time to this time, but then during those 10-minute breaks, I'm going to do something else. You know, do I need to try a meditation practice, or maybe get outside, or maybe I'm just hungry and need to eat a nutritious meal or a nutritious snack, or maybe I'm going to reach out to my favorite coworker and chit-chat with them for 10 minutes. So really, again, thinking about what can I do, and then noticing your energy afterwards. that's the most important point, to do really proactively do something to get that system back into balance.
Now, you had mentioned earlier about showing this kind of an example for our kids. Kids are going back to school. What suggestions do you have for parents, caregivers, to help their kids deal with the stress of being in school?
Such a great question. And I'm a new mom. I have a five-month-old daughter. So I've been, you know, thinking about this. This has been top of the mind as I have other moms and their kids are going back to school. And I think one of the things that has been so challenging for kids is that because of social media and the technology that can connect them to their peers in just an instant, that kids aren't getting that separation between school and home. You know, if we think about 20 years ago, when we went home in the evening and on the weekend, you'd have to call the landline, you know, and so we weren't as in touch and not Snapchatting or texting or FaceTiming. So kids often aren't able to get away from not only school, but some of the social drama as well. And sometimes that can be a source of pain that, oh, I wasn't invited in this, or, oh, I'm being teased in that way. So it's really important for families to have some boundaries around technology and how much kids can engage in that technology with their peers outside of school, and to have some time when they're just away with family. And again, when we think about building mastery or being in nature or doing some of the active physical recovery or the more passive recovery like meditation, those are things you can do as a family and involving kids early. Like, hey, you know, on Saturday, we're all going to do this as family bonding time. Or maybe a dinner, you know, around the dinner time, we're going to put our devices away and just be present and do a little gratitude practice together. Thinking about five things that went well and we're grateful for. Or maybe before bedtime, we're going to do some relaxation practices just to really unwind and recover. So again, I think as parents are working on this for themselves, there's a really so much benefit for kids learning this, because if a child's in that state of stress, and many of our children are, and kids are really struggling, have struggled during the pandemic and continue, they're not going to learn, right? They need resources to teach them, yeah, stress happens, but how do I re-regulate? And kids don't learn that themselves. They need to be taught. So having a parent sit down and teach them or model it or do it together, that's such benefit for the child. If I'm feeling kind of anxious and stressed, but hey, I have all these tools right now that I can use. And lastly, I think just being a safe container, really attuning to your child. So having some time, especially school starting in a couple weeks, having some time just to listen, to notice what's going on. How's your child doing? Some spaciousness. Like maybe you go for a drive, and often kids open up during a car ride, or you go for a walk, or you sit down and play a board game and ask them how they're doing and listen, so that you can pick up on, oh, they're worried about this, or they're scared about this, or they're angry about this, and just creating some space for children, your child, to talk about it. And then problem solve. Okay, when you're feeling this, why don't you try this? Or let's try this together and see how that works for you. So really prioritizing that time together is going to be really important to teach them those recovery skills.
It's really, really some important points. And I love the fact that you said that it's okay to have stress. We're going to have stress, but here's some tools to get through it, and it's going to be okay. Because sometimes kids just think everything is supposed to be perfect, and if it's not, then there's something wrong.
Oh, such a great point, right? Mm-hmm. And then they can start to catastrophize.
Yes.
Internalize it, there's something wrong with me. And instead, actually, stress is what makes us strong. It's kind of like a sword forged in fire is incredibly strong. And so sometimes parents want to protect their child from every little stress. But instead, to welcome the not welcome maybe, but, you know, to have some normalcy around the stresses of life, they're going to happen. But again, supporting your child to develop those resources and tools and problem solve and experiment, and sometimes it's not going to go so well, but taking that long-term view that what we're doing is strengthening our children, I think almost to become a larger container to handle more of the complications and complexities of life. And again, that's what helps them build that core strength, kind of like that sword forged in fire.
And,
A core sense of themselves, too.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. The tools are also so important for dealing with it. And just in the last few minutes, Shaila, let's go over that real quickly. What do you do if you're feeling that stress at work? What are some options that you have?
Great. Yeah, so, you know, it's going to come up maybe even later today, or probably this week. And first, identify, recognize, and label, like, this is a stressful moment, right? Noticing what's happening physiologically, emotionally, and mentally. And say, okay, that's that stress response turning on. Normalizing it, not feeling embarrassed or ashamed or freaked out by it, but that's just kind of stress that happens in a workplace. And then second, think about, okay, I need to work on that recovery plan in a couple different ways. One, having some boundaries between work and home life, turning off the phone, not checking email, mentally having that stop sign in your mind. So you're saying to your mind, stop thinking about work, I'll think about it tomorrow. You can even journal what you're worried about and say, okay, I'm going to put it away, kind of write it out, and
yes.
I'll think about that thought. You could do that even at bedtime. Don't take your worries to bed. Write it out for 2 minutes and then put it away so you can disengage at night when you're trying to fall asleep. Then think about building in some brief breaks during the workday and what can you actively do during that time to really re-energize, whether it's something nourishing physically or taking a walk or talking to somebody. And then think about some more longer recovery activities at the end of the workday, in the evening or the weekends. You know, physical exercise is really beneficial. Getting out in nature, so much research showing that's helpful. Or even thinking about, is there some activity where I can build that sense of mastery that would be really fun that you could do or give you that sense of accomplishment and satisfaction? So even if the work is stressful or some things at work aren't going well, hey, I'm getting really good at my Zumba class or my woodworking or my baking, you know, building that sense of accomplishment or mastery. And then lastly, I think just reach out and talk about it with other people. Sometimes our surrounding community, they might be doing things we hadn't thought of. Or certainly you can be a role model for your friends, family, certainly children in your life of working on this.
Well, Shaila, once again, you have given us so much to think about and so many wonderful tools. We really appreciate you being with us again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And here's wishing you a stress-free week.
thank you. I think I'll have less stress having talked about this with
you. All right. Wonderful.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Shaila Morgain. She is a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Stay with us on the Ideas Network as we'll be right back to talk about the importance of getting enough sleep for both you and your kids.